Okay, Reboot FM 88.4 in Berlin. This is Reboot FM, Axel Axel 4 in Berlin, live aus dem Transmediale. So, again, this is another live little transmission from the Transmediale Festival at the Haus der Kultur in der Welt in Berlin. Now we are starting a new round of discussions, and this is with Reboot FM's very own Pitt Schulz, and he is discussing a few topics with John Young and Deborah Nastios, and they are actually the architects of information. That's one of their projects. They do something which is cryptome.org. I have a hard time pronouncing this, and I'm sure they will correct this. This is actually something which is a kind of pre-WikiLeaks archive of many documents that were leaked that are very controversial, classified or otherwise. And yeah, they have, you know, I'm actually going through that. In the last 15 years, over 65,000 uploads. And it survived dozens of corporate takedown orders and hacker attacks. And I have to say, Deborah Nastios and John Young are as convinced as ever that all information must be free. I think I'm going to leave that as the introduction. They're quite, I think, renowned figures within a larger community of people that are interested in making sure, keeping governments and institutions accountable and using documents to do that. So Pitt Schulz is going to take it on with my John Young and Deborah Nastios.
Yeah. Good evening. Can you say something to the microphone to test it? Hello, John Young.
I'm here.
Good. You hear us, Diana? Good. Hello.
Hello, Deborah. There.
Deborah, you are also an artist, right? And not only an architect. You had an exhibition lately in New York.
I had an exhibition in Los Angeles last spring at the Dem Passwords Gallery on West Adams Street.
So before we speak about cryptome, I think we should take a chance to talk about your art. It's political art, I would say. That's as much as I understood. And it's somehow using material from cryptome or topics about surveillance and the city. But there's also material I found very interesting from Greek history of migration. So, I mean, you are an architect, but also an information architect, so you have a special visual style. Maybe you can just introduce us to your art.
Well, I like very much you searching through this bouquet of various titles and role-playings, because in fact it is a kind of ill-defined collection of practices that we have that I don't really establish very sovereign boundaries between. We flow very easily from one to the other. We take material and activities and content from one depository and shift it into the other practice. And so it's a continuity. It's a spectrum of practice and activity. So to say artist, architect, information architect, cryptome, licensed architect, licensed by the state of New York to practice in New York City, it's all an amalgam of borderless performance.
Mm-hmm.
And so my visual work, in fact, is very cartographic in nature and of a political cartography, a political geography, very narrative, and a counter-narrative to dominant geopolitical narratives from post-war years on.
Exactly.
So cryptome figures in that because cryptome's landscape is in that contra-narrative landscape of content that defies strict itinerary, state borders, and so on. So it's a very interesting landscape of constant redefinition and invention. And so every day as we begin our practice, it's a thrill of the unknown.
So you both have a background as architects. But you particularly, I found in an interview, have a background in intelligence community from their family. So you want to talk about that? You want to disclose it here?
I certainly do because, in fact, the new work that we premiered at Transmediale on a couple of evenings ago in the Anxious to Secure stream had very autobiographic, autobiogeographic elements buried in, which is typical of my work. But yes, I grew up in the Cold War context in a CIA family, and we moved. If I list the countries we lived in during the post-war years, you will see a trajectory of geopolitical interest by the Pax Americana. Mm-hmm. And so this is the context of my being in the world during early years, being in a very, being very locally in Greece, Vietnam, France, Korea, the Netherlands, Argentina, Iran, being very locally in situ as an emerging young person, but always with the narrative of the Cold War sort of hovering beyond the domestic perimeter.
And there you are, having this formidable, extraordinary archive of the, how it's called, the godfather of WikiLeaks. Julian Assange basically took the model of Cryptome and made it kind of into the Time magazine. But you are doing this since the 90s, so mid-90s, I would say. Since I'm basically on the web, I know about Cryptome. I don't know, when did you start Cryptome?
1996.
Yeah, so we started that time about the same time. That was like the time where people were still believing in the hacker ethics of information has to be free. It was long before open source was called open source. Probably was known from the intelligence community more than from the hackers community, the open source documents. So you are known to be releasing every day a package of highly classified documents, more or less classified, from various institutional contexts, corporations, internal documents. Maybe you can just start somewhere where you, maybe we can start with Echelon, because it was discussed here as a source of the Snowden discussion. But you can also take any thread you like where you would say this is where the moment where Cryptome started.
Well, it started with us joining the Maelius Cypherpunks in 1994. And, of course, that's the start of Assange as well, mm-hmm. on Cypherpunks. And there are dozens of people who got a start on Cypherpunks in the mid-90s. And so it deserves all credit for what's going on now. So in 1996, we started to publish documents from members of that mail list who had access to documents through their work but did not want to be associated with their release because they saw what was coming. With the wind down of the Cold War, this technology was going to be released to corporations and was going to be turned into the commercial market and against the public. Formerly, it was only directed at nations. So they knew that was coming because the jobs were drying up in the intelligence services and the contractors, and so they wanted to get this information out there. So they started to give it to us. We had a scanner and a computer, and so we started scanning and putting this stuff online, and they would do it only on the condition that they were not identified. So that was the start. And one of the nice things about it, we didn't know what this material was. We could not understand it ourselves, but we knew how to put stuff up. And that comes back to a predecessor, which I won't spend too much time on, that I personally started doing this kind of work in 1968 at Columbia, and where I first learned about social protests and activities parallel to your career, in which we set up a group to do this kind of work to correct our education or to supplement it and to not get stuck into a career path. And so that continues. So Cryptome is an outgrowth of that for me. For Deborah, she has a different origin, but both of us came at it from a particular direction of not wanting to be stuck in a career, or not only there, but to find other ways to engage with the public we were ostensibly to serve. But of course, we found out that we were being trained to serve an industry, not the public. So that continues.
That was a time of the Vietnam War, Watergate affair, so, and the Weatherman. This was somehow your context where you started.
That's correct. In fact, the Columbia Strike Committee, Mark Rudd and others, for a brief period of time, was stationed in my apartment when they got kicked off campus. And so that I had a family, a bunch of kids in there, and they came in with their wonderful attitude toward whatever they did. And so it was a thrilling experience to be exposed to young people's enthusiasm and the shocking the career path.